Good morning, Louise.
Good morning, Tracy.
How are you today?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm pretty good.
Good.
It was a little bit frostier this morning.
Wasn't it? It's foggy as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had some crispy windshield scraping.
Oh, did you? See, we live in Canoe, so we don't get that.
You don't?
No.
What? We're Why? Closer. You're right on the lake.
Yeah, we're closer to the lake.
Oh, I guess it right, so it's not quite as cold.
Yeah.
Oh. The lake effect.
Mm-hmm.
How lake nice for you.
Canoe, yes.
Do you have like a different gardening zone there?
I don't know, maybe.
I bet you do.
Well, the water table's very high. It's moss. It's the moss zone.
Nice. So your lawn is always green.
Totally mossy. Yeah, nice. Except when it's not, and then there's nothing, because it's very hard to grow grass in clay. Fun fact.
I learned that, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Living on the top of North Broadview was also very interesting gardening zone.
Yes.
Anyway, whole different thing.
It's true. We have a whole, we have six different geoclimatic zones.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know that Raven was, you know, only, well, it's not very far from where I am, but there's a different set of factors, variables there than there is in my neighborhood. So
yeah,
it's kind of crazy.
It's kind of cool.
Yeah, it is. It actually is nice.
Yeah.
Diversity within our own little tiny
mm-hmm.
community.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we are having a continuation on from last week's
That's
show.
That's right.
Because there was just so much to discuss coming out of the ArtsBC event,
yes.
the seminar and cultural roundtable that we had.
And again, fun fact, BC Arts Council is for artists. ArtsBC is for?
Arts organizations.
Yes. Power, people powering the arts.
Right.
And so
it's very much about an inclusive, it used to be the Assembly of BC Arts Councils.
Oh,
so
I
it used
see.
To be just arts councils.
Oh, I
councils.
Didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. They rebranded themselves a few years ago because there were so many more arts organizations that were not functioning as arts councils. They were more specific, more focused. So in case you didn't know, an arts council, its main goal is to be interdisciplinary.
Yes.
So for instance, our arts council is, we run the Arts Center, which has the art gallery and workspace and studio space in the basement, but mm-hmm. we also run Wednesday on the Wharf mm-hmm. and Random Acts of Music.
Mm-hmm.
And we are involved with multiple other kinds of programming, you know, a ticket subsidy program and things like that, right? So it's
how many? 18 programs? Or
yep.
Yeah.
18 programs.
Oh, pretty good, eh? I still remember.
Yeah. So, but there's more organizations that are focused on a specific sector, right?
Like right.
visual arts or
yes.
dance
yes.
or theater.
Sure.
Or, yeah.
yeah.
So they wanted to be inclusive of those groups.
And you also play an advocacy role in terms of representing all the other groups. Right?
Yeah.
So your members are Roots and Blues and...
Yep.
And
Shoeswap Theater.
And Shoeswap Theater.
Runaway Moon.
And Runaway Moon.
Yeah. And the writers groups.
Yes.
And, yeah. Yeah, that's our role.
Yeah.
And it's kind of hard
big,
sometimes.
Big job.
Yeah, because we also, you know, maintain the Arts Center, which is a historic building. And so sometimes it feels like the building becomes us,
yes.
we become the building. But our focus definitely is the
yeah.
across the spectrum.
And so your lease might only be a dollar, but it's a lot more than that.
Oh, God, yes.
yes.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
And we won't even go there.
No, no, fair enough. But you are getting in the budget, 2018 budget deliberations, I think, there's a nod to the District Arts Council.
Yes,
yeah.
I'm excited mm-hmm. because we've been talking about the front steps for a long time.
Yes.
And they're lovely front steps. Mm-hmm. They're also cracking and falling apart. There's the city crew has been trying to kind of patch and hold it together as best they can. But really, it's you know, it's an old
well,
building.
We're
it's
beyond
old steps.
Gorilla glue and duct tape now.
Yeah, and
not
also,
that that's what they were doing, but it's almost like every time you go out there, like, oh man,
yeah,
yeah,
I know. And also, they're not up to code anymore.
Oh, okay.
So there's a little bit of that
opportunity.
There's a code issue, and there's also a safety issue because the little tiny awning doesn't come out far enough to prevent snow and ice from
yes,
building up on the
yes,
steps.
Yes, yes, yes.
So there's different kinds
new
of
awning too, or no?
No, 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 no new awning.
Okay.
It's just that, you know, it just happens that the whole design of the steps, like from 1937. You know,
they
ideas
just
have
know
changed. Exactly.
Yes.
We didn't think about these kinds of things. It's like, yeah, every man for himself, right?
I know, but do you ever wonder, like, in 20 years from now, we'll say, oh my gosh, I had no idea.
Yeah, probably.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, we are kind of figuring stuff out
yes.
about human behavior, about mm-hmm. the way that materials behave over time and the elements are changing.
Yes.
Of course we're going to learn new stuff.
I know. I just can't wait to figure out what it is. And we'll all go, don't! I should have known that.
Why didn't I think of that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, sometime in our future, we're going to get new front steps.
Yes.
Very exciting.
Well, it's in the 2018 budget. Yeah. So hopefully in 2018.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Sometimes these things are,
a little longer.
Fussier.
Yes.
But, and it's also because availability of workers and, right? But I'm just really excited that it's actually got a line now.
For sure.
In the budget.
Yes. That's it. Once there's a line in the budget.
I know.
And it's the same with every project. Like yesterday, sorry, I'm dating the show, but Ministry of Transportation and Infrastructure was here hosting an open house at the Prestige for the close to final plans for the highway.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Where was I going with that? Oh, and so for years and years and years, we've talked about it. But the real question to ask is are the estimates in the budget? And until that money shows up in the budget, it's just a plan, man.
Yeah, yeah.
The money is in the budget.
Wow.
So that's exciting.
That is exciting.
Yes, and there's walking paths and
I know it's a much improved
multi-use paths and remediation for the bridge and protection of turtle habitat, and they've done a great we'd love to vilify public servants and yet
I know
they totally bust their butts getting this done.
I know,
it's such a thankless job.
Yeah. And trying.
I'm glad they're paid well, because I had to walk a long time ago, seriously. Right?
Yeah. Well, I feel like there's always this disconnect between, I don't know, like we have an idea in our heads, and we like to stick to our idea in our heads about what civil servants do. And the fact is that for the last, like for pretty much all my adult life, I've been hearing stories about the downsizing of departments and the packing on of extra duties onto the existing staff and giving more responsibilities to the, you know, the lower half of the workers. And I feel like, man, yeah, like we really need to step back and say, look, these guys do a lot.
Yeah, they have a very honorable job, public service
list of responsibilities every single day that they walk into that office. You know, it's not like they just get to show up and do yoga. It's really, it's really hard work. So,
just something to remember. Things are not always as they appear.
That's right.
Yes.
So now a little bit in that, in relation to that, I want to talk about board governance today, which sounds really dry, but it's not.
No.
Because we are in this rapidly changing world. I probably say those three words a lot, but we are in a
hashtag
time.
Rapidly changing world.
Yeah. Is there a hashtag for that?
There is now.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going with that. Yeah. So I've been thinking a lot about boards and board structures over the last few years, because a lot of the Arts Council, but I know a lot of other arts organizations and indeed lots of other nonprofits of any sector are having trouble attracting new board members, getting board members to be boots on the ground board members where actually they take on responsibility and do the work. And there are volunteers, so it's not like, we can start paying honorariums to the people. But I've been thinking about, why is it we're all struggling with this?
And but some boards are paying.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Like credit union
Yeah.
Yes.
That's right. I guess it's a different structure.
And the
structure,
higher
though.
Up, yeah. So.
Yeah. They follow different rules than we do.
Yes.
So I've been thinking about, why does it feel like the board structure is an outmoded thing? And so when we went to the ArtsBC seminar, I kind of went with that idea in my head, like, how is it that we still have to follow Robert's rules and all these, structures that were built in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, and now
and
generations are
even
changing.
Even before Robert's rules, is way back.
Then when all these organizations were founded, which mostly were in the 70s, then, like, why can't we change that with the times, with the generations? But when we started to talk about that at the seminar, I thought it was very interesting. Patricia brought up first that, that's Patricia Huntsman I'm referring to, who is awesome. Her and Judy Oberlander, who led this workshop, said boards are necessary to keep, like to attain and then to keep the public trust.
Absolutely.
That's just as simple as that.
Totally.
You cannot have any other structure that would give you that same sense of trust. With your community.
No. Because it's all about checks and balances and diligence and liability and
And you can't have a stake in it. You can't have money coming your way.
No.
You can't have bonuses. You can't have quotas and right? Like you just it's not the same as business. No. It's just not.
No, it's bias and ethics and and there has to be the proper paper trail to show that that wasn't Tracy's decision. Tracy recommended it, but it was authorized by a board representing a public entity that receives public funding.
Right.
Yes.
And maybe that's the key. Mm-hmm. When you're receiving money that is at all, originating from taxpayers, mm-hmm. you owe the taxpayers mm-hmm. that transparency and the faith. You've got to show them that they're getting benefit mm-hmm. from their investment. Mm-hmm. And we would never want to see, like, we as a sector would never want to see specific benefit going to only a specific group of people when we are actually receiving funds from,
absolutely
the larger agencies and government bodies. So of course we want to make sure everybody benefits.
Yes.
So it's fine. That's what we do, but that's the
statutory requirement.
Yeah. But that's the one way we can make, we can guarantee that every organization does that is by keeping intact the board structure. Mm-hmm. So with that in mind, board governance has to be something we talk about now because it is a changing world and we are facing a generational shift in thinking and technology is different. Mm-hmm. And, so anyway, that was a main focus for a couple hours at this seminar. So I'd like to talk about a few.
Oh, great. I want those to things. Hear. And a lot of this, I just want to point out a lot of this is on the artsbc.org site under library. I mean, it's incredible how many resources they have. So if you're sitting there thinking, I really need to talk to my board about this. Or if you're a board member and you're like, oh, we really need to talk about this with the staff. There's huge, massive amounts of
resources.
Yes.
And ArtsBC membership for you.
And the hotline.
Yeah. Which is awesome. Mm-hmm. Because they're actually excited about their hotline. So they'll answer the phone and answer your questions.
That's right.
What was I going to say about that?
Board governance, need to talk about it.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Anyway, well, I can just launch. So one of the things that I did is I took a whole lot of notes about potential changes we could make to our board right away, just to make it a little bit more interesting to be part of the board.
Yes.
And to make sure that everybody feels included right off the mark and feels like they don't have to just sit there during boring meetings for 6 months until they figure out what the organization does.
Yes.
So for new board members, one of the big takeaways was a peer mentor.
Yes.
Isn't that a great idea?
Yes.
Simple. Mm-hmm. Have a board member who's been on your board for a few years be the mentor to the new board mm-hmm. member.
Do you remember when I was first on the board at the art gallery? And I think I was there 2 years before I knew I even had a folder.
Oh, yeah.
There's a folder there with your name. I'm like, oh, I didn't know that. But I mean, it's little things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know there are little things. And then you don't want to necessarily use meeting time to ask a question that you think is not. Like, is not relevant to the discussion.
Where are the bathrooms?
Right? Well, or who does rent on Thursdays in the basement? Mm-hmm. Right? Like, I totally understand that a new board member wouldn't want to use up,
because you don't want to look like you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
It's the other thing. I remember thinking, oh, yeah, no, good. Yeah, of course. I know what I'm doing.
Of course I know.
But it wasn't until I was comfortable and settled that I was willing to take the risk to say, about that, what folder are you talking about?
Yeah. So there could be that one person that new board member can
just
call.
Just kind of walks you through the...
Yeah. And that they can, and that their other end of the email, hey, I just was wondering. And, it's so easy. Mm-hmm. So that was number one takeaway. One of the things that was discussed and identified as really important is keeping a board in place for nonprofit organizations, keeping the public trust and making it more interesting and more integrated, more engaging for new board members. Mm-hmm. So I just had talked about the whole peer mentor thing, which was like a really good, for me.
The peer mentor. Oh, sorry. You said the peer mentor. I'm like, peer, what is a peer mentor? That sounds fun.
Like perimeter?
Yeah. So yes, peer mentors. That's absolutely key.
I think so. And we talked about that. So we had a board meeting last Monday.
Yes.
And I brought my three big takeaways from this seminar, because mm-hmm. only one of my board members was, or two, I guess, a new board member and a existing board member were able to go.
Yes.
But my report to the rest of the board was like, we should do these things.
Yes.
Everybody was excited.
Oh, so, that's great.
Yeah. So we're doing a mentor thing. And then the board integration process is bigger than the, you know, you show up and you get your binder and here's mm-hmm. our policy and here's our thing. You know, there's actually a lot more things that can go into that binder mm-hmm. besides policy. Really simple things that maybe the people don't know, like a list of your programs and where the funding comes from
for
those programs, who runs the programs,
yes.
a list of all the operations that we do, the staff structure, who the staff are, who is the name of everything, what are our hours, yeah, where the bathrooms are.
Yes.
Like, there's a whole lot of stuff that should go into the mm-hmm. little board binder, because then it's a reference manual for them.
Yes.
Yeah. So keep that interesting, not just policy, because that's a little dry.
A little dry.
And then one of the other ideas was to build a board portal on your website.
Yes.
And this would be a place where you could put documents that not only are like the minutes, agendas, and, you know, reports from people for board meetings, because that's another part later on that we can talk about, other ways to make board meetings more interesting. But just general documents that you can share, like if you're working on the annual budget and or you're working on a grant application, mm-hmm. you want somebody to read it over. Mm-hmm. And, you know, have a little board portal that's just for board and staff to access on your website.
Yes.
Apparently it's fairly straightforward to set something like that up.
Easy peasy.
Yeah. Or even Google Docs, I suppose. You could just share.
Or Dropbox or...
Yeah.
Yeah. But there's so much you can do.
Yeah. But if there's a place that you can put documents like that where people can, on their own time, access the things that they need to
read.
For
sure. And then you just send the link. Here's the...
Yeah.
Right? I mean, the city does that. I get a link and it sends... I just click in and there it is. Yeah. All of it.
But I guess that's something that I never thought about doing, because I usually just email the stuff out a few days ahead.
She's not, and it's weird because I've been setting those up for organizations like since I started in design.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, and why
I never ever thought to set you guys up. That was silly.
Anyway,
it also depends on the digital literacy comfort levels of board members, and when you're dealing with board members who are maybe less comfortable in a digital world,
yeah,
just doesn't sort of pop up.
That's true,
right?
Yeah, and that's
a great place to warehouse. We talked last week a little bit about keeping the knowledge, right? Like you have to be the knowledge keeper,
yeah.
And so that's a big, you know, steel cabinet in the sky where you can keep it all,
yeah,
and then refer back,
yeah,
yeah.
And that everybody can access that.
Yes.
Because I think sometimes when I'm printing the minutes for acceptance at the next meeting and I read them over and go, oh, that was supposed to happen. Oh,
yes.
I wonder if that got done.
Yes.
Right? Like we probably should make sure that that's all accessible very quickly mm-hmm. so that board members who say, yeah, I can look into that, actually can see that, yes. Oh, I was supposed to look into that.
Yes.
Rather than just finding out at the next meeting, to do that.
Next time. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was a good thing. And then the consent agenda.
Yeah, I don't really get that. I feel like that's kind of lingo-y. I don't know what that means.
Well, I actually was, when I brought this up at my board level, it was pointed out to me that at other boards, some people actually read out the minutes to accept the minutes from the previous meeting.
Okay.
Like they read them. Hmm. And then the ED reads their whole report, and then like everything is read out, like as if nobody else on the board can read mm-hmm. the paper in front of them. So when I was saying we should do this, because it just means that reports are grouped together and accepted as soon as you get to the board meeting, so that you can spend the meeting time on strategic planning.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's all it means?
That's all it means.
Okay, see, it just feels like fancy pants language.
Yeah.
We do things differently.
It just means that you've pre-approved minutes because you've all read them.
Yeah.
Any, like the treasurer's report, the ED report, the committee reports, all of those things are provided in advance. You read them, you get to the meeting, you accept them, you like make a motion, blah, 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 accept them, and then you move on.
Okay.
So, but apparently, like we mostly do that.
Yes.
Because
I don't remember reading. Well, I really resent that when I go to a meeting and someone reads to me something that I've already been provided with. I'm like,
yeah.
How much time do I need to waste here?
Exactly.
No.
Yeah. Well, and one person on my board who sits on another board said 40 minutes was used up reading out reports at every meeting. So they had to make that change. It was ridiculous. Like people were sitting there for 40 minutes listening, like at story time. So, so we talked about what that meant to us and decided that, you know, yes, we already do a lot of that, but the ED report is a good opportunity. And I actually carved down my ED report over the last few years. Like I used to report on pretty much everything we do, but it did take a long time and it was mostly me talking. So now I've break it down into only 4 or 5 points that I think they're kind of critical to discuss at the board level.
Yes.
I just figure they trust me to take care of all the other stuff.
And plus chain of command is important. Like you, as ED, you need to know what has to go to the board and what doesn't.
Yeah.
And the board needs to make that clear through their policies. And some boards aren't very good at that. Yeah. Everything goes to the board and the board doesn't really want to let anything go, right?
Yeah.
So you have to be, sometimes you have to be firm, like this is an operational question, not a board directive.
Right.
So I'm doing it.
Well, and there's another part.
Yeah.
The board roles. And that is something that should be in the initial board package that goes to your new directors. What is your role on this board? Mm-hmm. What are you supposed to be doing? And what are you not supposed to be
doing? Yes.
And it's okay to say, these are your roles and these are definitely not your roles.
Right.
Because when you start getting, like every time you get a new director, if you have to go through the process of, you know, new boss every single time, that's very tiring on the existing structure.
For sure. Right? And the other thing of chain of command is organizations who are efficient, staff people only report to one supervisor.
Yeah.
So you can't have more than one boss. So sometimes what happens on boards, people are like, well, I'm the board chair, so I'm going to tell you, I'm going to come to you privately and say, I need you to get this done. Mm-hmm. When in fact, that's not your job. Your job is to go to the ED and then the ED decides whether or not that moves forward as a project.
Right.
Right.
Well, that's, yeah. And that's the thing about policy. Like it all kind of comes down to what's written down. Mm-hmm. Everybody needs to understand what the structure is. Like what the structure is, why the structure is in place, and how the structure works best to meet the needs of the organization.
Yes.
The mandate of the organization. If everybody understands that, it goes very smoothly. Mm-hmm. It's just when there's no particular knowledge or understanding of it that it all goes south. So it's quite easy to just lay it all out, make sure every board member and every staff member knows exactly what your policy is, and then should actually go fairly smoothly.
And a good board meeting shouldn't feel like you've just got your teeth cleaned. It shouldn't.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, you should feel like it was productive, responsive, quick, you know, moving swiftly.
Yeah.
Not an opportunity to ramble on just because you have the floor, that kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
So the thing about the consent agenda is that it allows time for more sort of meaningful discussion.
Oh, well, that's good. I didn't know that's what that was.
Yeah. Yeah. But... or not but one of the things you could use that time for is allowing a board member per meeting or even a couple board members to share an article or a video or something that is of interest to the organization.
Oh, great.
I know, right?
An education piece.
Exactly. Yes. Like, let's expand our minds for a few minutes and watch a TED talk on something that's, you know, in our sector or something that's inspirational. And it gives every board member a chance to offer that kind of thing. Like, oh, I listened to this podcast. Let's all listen to it. You know, anything that kind of references what the organization is doing is helpful for the board to experience together.
Yes.
Then you can have that discussion time afterwards and say, you know, that really applies to us because of this.
Yes.
Maybe we should try that. Mm-hmm. So that's an important thing to carve out the time for at your board meetings. And it makes it more fun.
Yes. Because
who doesn't want to sit and watch a TED talk?
Well,
right.
And board members do it because they want to give back to their community, because they want to have fun, and because they want some form of recognition. Right.
Yeah. So whether that comes in the form of,
it's always exchange of value. Like, I will exchange my time for this.
Yeah.
But what is the exchange for me?
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
and I hate to be cynical, but that's how life works.
You're right. And there better be something rewarding for it, for them in there. It's hard to imagine a board meeting being rewarding at this level.
Yeah. And for me, a reward is I get the agenda ahead of time with the reports. it starts on time, mm-hmm. and the chair is in charge.
Yeah.
Like, because you go, like, meetings go off the rails, and it creates a lot of bad will, and it's completely unnecessary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And time, so, schedule.
Yeah.
On your agenda.
I don't really think you can be efficient for more than an hour without a break.
No, you're actually right. There's scientific proof mm-hmm. about that. Mm-hmm. Your brain can only function, focus on one task for 20 minutes at a time, and then and basically for 3 20-minute segments, and then you would need a significant break.
Mm-hmm.
So an hour is the ideal time for a board meeting. But the other thing too is that if you time things out on the agenda, now you would need either the ED or the chair or, you know, whoever sort of really understands the dynamics of a board meeting to do this, you can time out your board meeting so that you allot certain amount of time for things that require more, that you believe will need more discussion,
mm-hmm.
more thought, more planning, whatever. And then people can see when they arrive at the meeting, there's 5 minutes for this particular yes. topic. So it's not really a big one. We just have to make this decision and that's it. Oh, there's 15 minutes for this thing. Okay, that's a big one. We really yes. have to focus.
Exactly.
And you know, actually we get to talk about what, you know, the details are or whatever. But when you time out a meeting, it really helps everybody see, oh, okay, that's the priority.
Yes.
So that's something, mm-hmm. a clue to do.
Yeah, and let the committees do the work and report back.
Yeah, that's something that doesn't, I don't know about boards that you sit on, but any other boards that I've sat on, the committee reports become the thing that's actually taking the most time.
Yes.
Because the committees don't seem to function, like, it's, I think it's just challenging. People really want to talk about stuff, and it's really hard for boards to let a smaller group decide things for them. So when a committee comes back to the board and says, we decided this, the board's like, well, why? And then you end up having the whole committee meeting inside
all
the
over
board
again.
Meeting.
Yeah.
So there's a level of trust there that mm-hmm. has to be kind of, yeah, like you have to just say, we trust you guys to take care yes. of this. Thank you very much.
Yes.
And report back to us,
right.
and we'll accept that yeah. report and be done.
And I mean, to be, I don't know, maybe it's the weather, I'm being cynical, but I think one of the lessons I learned being on boards, and it took me a while to figure this out, is that as a board member, you're not there because you know better than anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. You're not. You're there to listen and take it in and try and bring a perspective that might not be considered, and if it's not considered, it would put the organization in a liability position. That's all there is.
Ah.
Diligence and liability.
I like that approach. You're there to give a perspective. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And if the perspective has no relevance, like, oh, well, that reminds me of the time that I did this or that, that's not relevant. It doesn't add value.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm. Interesting.
Yeah.
So the other thing that was brought up was board contributions. And apparently that's becoming a thing where board members are expected to provide meaningful cash gifts to the organization every year, an annual donation.
Okay.
So it's kind of interesting what you talk about, the exchange of value, mm-hmm. like what am I getting, what are, you know, out of this. But this has become more and more frequent, and I've heard it talked about a lot, that board members, like part of their, yep, I'm going to give this amount of time, I'm going to head this committee, and I'm going to give this much money.
Got to have skin in the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's tough because a lot of people choose volunteering over.
Yeah.
Not cash, but time, mm-hmm. right? So, but yeah, it's an idea that's here and.
Yeah. But it's all scale though, right? It's what you can manage.
Mm-hmm.
And the example was like, if you gave $5 a month to your organization, that's $60 a year.
Yes.
And that is a significant donation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something to think about, that if that's how you, you know, want to structure it, that's a very manageable thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I was reminded, and I didn't want to say this out loud because I thought it might be something really bad that's very 90s or something. But I remember reading an article about, the 3G board.
Yes.
Do you remember the 3G board?
Vaguely.
It's you either get money.
Yes.
You give money.
Yes.
Or you get off the board.
Okay. Wow. And yeah. And if you can't give, maybe you can help get.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so sponsorship, mm-hmm. relationships, grant writing, right? Like if there's things you can do to get money, then that's a gift to the fund development of mm-hmm. the organization.
Mm-hmm. And But any transaction involves putting money up. Right? You can't get a loan from the bank if you're not showing that you've got skin in the game. Like,
yeah,
that's just the way life is.
Yep.
Yeah.
But we have a funny thing. Like, I even had challenges in the past with volunteers at my organization saying, well, they volunteer, so they shouldn't have to buy a membership. Mm-hmm. And we'd have to say, but you actually have to be a member in order for us, our insurance, to cover you as a volunteer.
As a volunteer, yeah.
And they're like, well, don't I get a free membership because I volunteer?
I see,
right?
Yeah.
Like, it was this weird mm-hmm. kind of, yeah. So some people value their volunteer time separate, like, or as part of the same, you know, thing as membership and donations.
Yeah, that volunteer time has cash value. I don't agree, but.
I don't think I agree with that either. Mm-hmm. I think it's a different kind mm-hmm. of value. And yeah. It's like,
it's not a lesser value. It's just a different
kind. It's just different. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, so that's something to think about from your, like at a board, any size of board, mm-hmm. like whether you have staff or not, right? The meaningful cash gift, just, you know, something to consider. And also planned giving is the other thing. It sounds morbid, but talk about estate planning
yes.
with your board members, because everybody has people in their lives who are thinking about their wills.
Yes.
And planned giving is one of the ways that you can build a fund, like the endowment fund with a foundation.
Absolutely.
That has a perpetual, you know, benefit to your organization.
Well, if you look at the Shuswap Community Foundation, mm-hmm. I mean, they've done incredible, incredible work with planned giving.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? So there's lots, all the options.
Such a powerful
all those different
legacy.
Yeah. Funds that you can put your money into. You can, you know, leave it in your estate, or you mm-hmm. can donate during your lifetime. But you could basically choose where the grants go mm-hmm. based on the fund that you give to. Children's programming, arts, environment, sports, anything.
Yes.
You pick.
Yes.
So that's pretty awesome
yeah.
that we have that here in the community. Okay. One of the things that we don't think about very often is a conflict of interest.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it's, you know, you think it's one of those things for higher board level decisions, cities, you know, councils.
Oh,
and
try and get
like
through a day without using ethics as a decision maker.
Yeah.
We're making ethical decisions all the time.
Yeah.
Yes.
So.
And conflict of interest, that's what that is. There's nothing wrong with a conflict of interest. Nothing.
Yeah,
what's wrong is if you make the decision despite being in conflict.
Yeah.
Right? So it's not like, oh my God, conflict of interest, you're a bad person. No, no. Conflict of interest, a declared conflict of interest, you're a good person.
Yeah.
Right? So
but you
are
have
in
to,
conflict.
Yes, but you have to be aware of it.
And declare it and
yes.
step away.
Yeah.
Yes.
And all that means is, yeah, you just have to step out
mm-hmm.
and not be part of that conversation. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
There's sample policies, lots of templates online for small organizations
yes.
that help you decide what is your ethics policy.
And, you know, organizational behavior has this great little chart. Are you doing it for your own gain? For your own gain? Yes. Unethical. Are you doing it for the gain of others? Yes. Ethical. Right? And you just follow the little chart. Go, hey, there we go. We're fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yep. that's just something you should have in somewhere in your policies.
Yes.
That, you know, it's just one of those things you think you don't have to think about, but it's there. You do have to think about it. And then you should have a diversity of representation from your community.
Mm-hmm.
And that is to kind of look at your whole community and decide, where are your gaps?
Mm-hmm.
You know, are all of your members over 50?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe if your whole community has 40% of its community residents under 50, 40% of your board should be under 50.
Yes, and now you can do that easily because the census is done. Ta-da!
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
It's done tomorrow, but...
Yeah, so think about community representation. That's an important part of board development for the future, right? For sustainability, too. And then think about your engagement level, how you reach and how you advocate for your organization outside of the board meetings. So each of your board members is an ambassador to your organization.
Yes.
And so they need to be equipped with all of the knowledge, all of the history, mm-hmm. all of the mandate details, so that when they go to other boards or to other groups or their book club or their knitting group or to the coffee shop with their friends, they can be an ambassador for your
yes.
organization, and they have the right information.
Yeah, your advocate, your champion.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's pretty much it. Like, there's all these little details that we kind of think about, you know, are structurally you know, they're boring. They're just like, they feel government heavy, and but they're not. They're actually important little elements that if they're in place and you're communicating openly mm-hmm. and the expectations are clear, it can be engaging and fun and you can and be very fulfilling.
Meaningful and rewarding.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just a few little tidbits.
Yeah. And I guess I would say, okay, so what if they are boring? Try running an organization without one.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no organization. That's the whole nature of organization is what is the structure that what is the structure?
Yeah.
What is the reporting? What is the chain of command, right?
Yeah.
How do we make decisions? What are our values? Like if you don't have any of it, you're just a bunch of people sitting around doing nothing.
Yeah.
Which you can do for free. You don't even need to book a meeting.
Yeah.
You know?
And
so
if you really think that we don't need certain organizations, then think about what that organization does and then imagine your community mm-hmm. without it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like imagine our community without the Trail Alliance. Right?
I can't imagine.
Imagine our community without the Arts Center. Mm-hmm. Like if it was just a building that was rented out to you know, some offices and like, you know, all these organizations exist because there were people, you know, passionate enough to say, we need this.
Yes.
And they continue to exist because there are passionate people that keep getting on that board to say, we continue to need this.
Yes.
So let's think about what we like our community to look like.
Yeah. Process is your friend, not your enemy. Right. And so often I hear, oh, it takes so long. And so the process and blah, blah, blah. But I'm like, dude, you need this. Like, try driving into town with no roads. Like, this is what we're talking about.
Yeah.
We need roads to get to places.
Yep.
Yeah.
We need lights on the street.
Absolutely. And it's just, it's all about, you know, bring up the Trail Alliance. This is the roadmap,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's what process is, a roadmap. So yeah. If you don't use a roadmap, I don't understand. I mean, I'm grateful to process. I find it's comforting. It reminds me that the money's being spent carefully and diligently, you know, that we're being productive, that we're getting somewhere. Because mm-hmm. the only thing worse than, and people say, well, it gets in the way of completing things. I actually think it's there to enable that. And so I've watched groups maybe who don't, you know, wrap their arms around process. And then they think, how come we're not getting anything done? And I'm like, hello, right? And I don't want anyone to feel like they're being slighted, but every group is a different kind of dynamic. So, mm-hmm. and we all belong to different groups. Like you have to be a rocket scientist to see what works and what doesn't work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and yeah, that's true. Process is kind of why we're on the planet. If everything was just done, well, I guess we'd be done.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't have any reason to live anymore.
Yeah.
Process so, is living.
Yeah, and so most conflicts come up because of one of two reasons, process or personality. And you have to figure out, is this a process problem or is this a personality problem?
Oh.
Right?
Yeah.
And so if the process looks fine, then you probably have a little bit of a relationship issues to sort out.
Yeah.
And that happens a lot too. I mean, it's perfectly normal.
We're all individuals.
Yes,
right?
Yeah. And so, but once you figure out what kind of problem we're talking about, it's much easier to find the solution.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, then there's all these theories about what motivates people. So one theory is that we're motivated from within. So there really isn't any process you can put in place to motivate me more because that's internal.
Mm-hmm.
But there are things you can put in place that will lead to greater dissatisfaction with the outcome, right? So you're changing processes to minimize dissatisfaction, not to increase satisfaction.
Mm.
So it's really fascinating.
Yeah. When are you going to teach this course?
I don't know, but I did talk to the dean at the college, and I thought maybe it would be a good continuing ed course.
Yeah. Except if you give people the option, you know, like it's hard to get people to commit to something.
Oh, no, I mean, we just run it through the college.
I know, but but it's almost like it needs to be part of all other programming, right?
Yes.
Like this segment needs to be just somehow integrated into every kind of like the arts associate degree and the trades and the, right? Like
it should. Needs to be I think it should. That's how powerful it's been for me anyway, just as an instructor. But yeah.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Do we have time to talk about the six hats?
I don't know.
Okay, let's just quickly zip through because
I think listeners will remember once and months and months ago, we talked about the art of decision making.
Yeah.
And it was raised actually when I was at the community-to-community forum hosted by an Iskonalith Indian band, and Chief Wayne Christian talked about the six hats.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So let's just go over them.
Okay.
Quickly.
If you have trouble making a decision at your board level, try the six hats. Mm-hmm. You might even want to have pieces of paper to help you remember, to help you finish it. But basically, six people have to have six different roles. The white hat is the information hat that covers the facts and the figures, information that and needs and gaps that need filling in. Mm-hmm. Those people can ask for more information or data.
Yes. And everyone can wear the white hat for a short time.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And just get all that out on the table.
Right. The red hat represents emotions. So intuition, feelings, like, how does this make you feel? How does this proposal make you feel? Are you scared? Does it make you feel threatened? That's the red hat. The yellow hat is optimism. So this is looking at all the positive things. Oh, this will work. And this has this benefit and this person will love it. And we'll get this accomplished. That's the optimism. The black hat is the pessimism hat. Yes. So this is everything that could go wrong.
Yes.
The caution hat. Oh my God, this could happen. This could be bad. It could turn out a disaster if we did this.
Yes.
The green hat of growth and possibilities. Mm-hmm. It's basically the creativity hat. So alternatives, innovations, changes that could happen that would make it a little bit more creative, a little bit more different. And the blue hat is the process hat. This would be you. This is the overview that kind of helps us look not just at the subject itself, but the 30,000 foot view.
Yes.
So are we doing everything that we need to do to make this work well? And are we being the most effective with our time and our dollars and our resources? So yeah, there's the six hats. It's actually a lovely way to balance the discussion and to give everybody a role in that process so that nobody's sitting back. The introverted people who take a few minutes to process things often feel left out of these conversations. It's a good way to kind of make sure everybody's included.
That's right.
And now,
as the art world turns, a dramatic moment in the arts.
So I'm dating the show here, but it is kind of the season where we start thinking about decorations and making twinkly lighted things and stuff like that. So this dramatic moment is kind of related to that whole creating a hygge, right? Is that the word?
Hygge?
Hygge.
Oh.
That sense of coziness and kind of coming inside and being with friends and having cocoa and like that feeling of warmth and happiness because of, you know, winter outside and it's dark and we gather, make our world shrink a bit.
Yes. Right? Make our world shrink.
Yeah. So, your dramatic moment is kind of all about shrinking.
Well, I just, I'm obsessed with miniature things and I don't know why that is, like whether and people will be putting out their mini Santa villages and mini lights on absolutely everything. Little mini cookies, little mini Christmas balls. I mean, we love little tiny things.
Yeah.
And I have no idea why that is. I mean, we just had a huge conversation on the minutiae of of board governance, right?
Yeah.
So I think we like to take big things and cut them down into little manageable chunks. Anyway, I was watching Sunday Morning on CBS, which is like my favorite show. I've talked about this before. And they did a piece on this, their food. It's a food studio and they produce shows, food shows that they sell to the Food Network. Anyway, just kind of on a lark one day, someone brought in their daughter's dollhouse and it had a mini kitchen in it, a mini stove. So the producer said, just as a joke, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we could make a mini food show? Well, they did it. So they had these little wee tiny, I mean, it was, you know, fancy high-end miniature furniture. Mm-hmm. And they had a little stove and they put a little fire in it, right? And then they figure out all the mini food and they make like mini hamburgers and mini ice cream and mini pasta. And then they were showing how they do it all. And I guess they have this huge following on YouTube.
Oh, wow.
So now there's mini cooking shows all over the world, especially in Japan.
Oh my gosh.
So they're showing how you can make like mini sushi, and it's all edible.
Yeah.
And so now they're making mini spoons and mini knives. And I mean, it's just like this big, huge
wow
thing. Well, I just think it's so
it's wild. And you were just showing me this little video of a mini screen printing press.
Yeah, a mini printing press for t-shirts.
Like, it's the teeniest thing.
Tiny
little squeegee.
It would hold in your hand. Yeah. A little squeegee.
Tiny t-shirt with a little tiny print being screen printed onto it.
Yeah. So what is that about?
What is that about? And like you said about the Santa villages.
Is it a sense of power that this is small and I am big? Or what is it? Well, is it a sense of accomplishment that you're doing something that seems beyond the ability to do? Like, it's astounding. Maybe, you should go Google it.
Maybe it has a lot to do with what we were just talking about with process, right? Like, sometimes processes feel so enormous. Mm-hmm. Like, so this seems insurmountable that we can possibly get to the end of this process.
Yes.
But if we shrink it right down.
Yes, and shrink it right down.
On a little tiny scale, we can see the end results quicker. Yeah.
So it could be a form of editing. Like, we're just trying to edit out all the unnecessary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, I think the representation of something gives us an emotional, reward.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's why people do the mini villages and stuff at Christmas.
Yeah, mini villages. And it extends, into the marketplace. Mini dogs, like miniature pets and mini homes.
That's right. The
tiny home
phenomenon
is here to stay, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we're not shrinking as of global population.
No.
So we better figure something out. And also, we have an efficiency problem because
Many stoves, many furniture, it's like, it's a thing.
Yeah. And there's 50% of Canadians live alone.
Yeah.
Like, that's not efficient.
No.
We have to figure out not how to live that's alone true. In gigantic houses.
Yeah. And so like, small is the new big.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So one of the things that came out recently in a news story was the Sequimic people and their tiny homes near Kamloops.
Yes.
That's very exciting.
Yes.
And solar powered too.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean.
And it's a political statement because it's on the pipeline path.
Yes.
Yes.
And, yeah, that's right.
And so they're wrestling those issues, but they're doing it in a. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a. You're right. It's a statement, but it's also like. This is our home.
Mm-hmm.
And even though we don't have big sprawling ranches all over every piece of ground, it's still our home.
Mm-hmm.
And so, we have to think about our home differently. You know, it's not just about how many rooms you have.
Yes.
It's where you spend your time.
And sometimes the smallest gesture will end up with the biggest, right?
Yeah.
Biggest bang for your buck. It's just so interesting. Yeah.
That's all about editing too, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
And to really think about what is the outcome that we want.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. Now, speaking of outcome, I have to run away.
Speaking about goings.
So I want you to listen carefully because Tracy's going to tell you all about, she's going to talk to you all about all the upcoming arts events.
I am all by myself.
And you're going to do
awesome.
What am
I going to do if I have nobody to look across the table at?
Just pretend I'm here.
I can't. Well, did you bring a cardboard cutout of yourself?
No, I have not.
I need that. You should make one of yourself.
Here, I'll make you a little stick.
You could do that.
A stick person.
Just draw yourself.
No, they're out there. They're listening. You're listening, right? And then, so just listen carefully. Trace is going to tell you all about the... I'll let her get going and then I'll quietly sneak out.
Okay,
you won't even know that I'm not here.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Just
think of me
really
that I'm really
quiet.
Mini
me.
Yeah, just like a little Lego just sitting here.
And you couldn't reach the microphone, so
that's
you had
right.
to yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
All right. So I'll start with this week because tonight, if you're listening live, tonight at the art gallery we're having a pajama knitting party. And it's not what you're thinking. We actually have a purpose. Although I would love to just have pajama knitting parties because it's a Hygge thing. I just kind of like to snuggle down and have my jammies on and knit. But tonight we're actually having a tutorial by Nikki Weber to teach us interesting ways to work on the cobblestone pieces for the big fiber. Yeah, I'm looking at Eric. It's actually working out very nicely. I'll just talk to Eric in the other room there. To work on cobblestone pieces for the knitted pathway of the Little Lake project. So if I haven't talked about Little Lake before, this is a giant fiber community project that we're doing. It's mostly felted sculpture, and we have quite a team of people who are working on the lake And we've got a whole bunch of workshops and other engagement sort of pieces to it that will help people be able to create parts of the lake, like water lilies and cattails and ducks and all kinds of things. So the one thing that we're going to have, though, is this pathway going around the outside of the lake that you can walk on. It'll be kind of like a knitted tree where you had to take your shoes off and walk around in your socks. But this pathway will be knitted by people, by members of the community. So we're having a tutorial tonight that is basically how to use up bits and bobs of your existing wool stash. And it doesn't actually have to be 100% wool, but some kind of wool blend yarn, because we kind of want to felt these things up a bit. And how to make these little pieces that will be fitted together as a cobblestone. So tonight from 6 till 9 at the gallery, so we're talking Wednesday, November 29th, from 6 till 9, come in your PJs with your knitting needles. We've got yarn, we've got tea, we've got pillows and the root rug from the knitted tree to sit on. And we're also going to watch a couple of YouTube documentaries about artists who use yarn in their installations, just kind of as, you know, an extra fun thing. But we'll learn from Nikki how to make these cobblestone pieces. So, and it's totally free. Like, just come along and enjoy. So after that, of course, we've got all kinds of Christmas events coming up. The Spinners and Weavers, speaking of warm and fuzzy, Spinners and Weavers Guild is having their Christmas sale on Saturday, December 2nd. If you haven't been to that before, make sure you allow yourself a solid 2 hours to enjoy it, because it is really a beautiful display of all of the incredible work that these fiber artists do. So it goes from 10 till 4 at the Senior Center, Saturday on December 2nd. And then you've got all kinds of choir events, choir and band events, because it's really all about gathering and singing and music, right? Wednesday, December 6th is Shuswap Men's Chorus. Their concert is called Making Spirits Bright. And there's a rumor that there might be a special guest appearance by Elvis. So we won't even, you know, we won't go there. We don't know if that's true or not, because maybe Elvis is still alive, maybe not. But anyway, Wednesday, December 6th, that's at the Nexus, 7:30 at night, and you can get tickets at the Pink Cherry. And then on December 9th, Saturday, December 9th, the Salmon River Community Band is having its Christmas concert, also at the Nexus, also at 7:30, and admission is by donation at the door. Also on Saturday, December 9th, if you're out and about and you want to do some fun things with your kids or with your grandkids or with your neighbor's kids, you can go to the Elves Workshop at the gallery. That goes from 11 until 3, and it's drop-in. And what we do there is have 4 creation stations where families with children can come and make things together. So you kind of float from one station to the next, and you can make gifts or tree ornaments or whatever. And all of the Elves Workshop Day is kind of all on the True North theme, because we have the True North exhibition going on, of course, until the 16th, December 16th. And then if you have not purchased your tickets for Caravan Farm Theater, Gift of the Magi, you better do so like toot sweet, because it is a shorter run. It's only a 3-week run, and a lot of the shows are sold out. So call Ticket Seller or go online to ticketseller.ca and get your tickets. Sleigh Ride Show. I mean, it's a magical experience, so you don't want to miss that. In addition to all the wonderful Christmas events, our last coffee break of the year will be on Thursday, December 14th. So at the Art Gallery, during the True North exhibition, we always have these coffee break artist talk days. So we'll have a walkabout with some of the exhibiting artists, because this was a juried show, and we have 28 artists in the show. But because it's the last show of the year, of the Canada 150 year, we're having the official voting for the cookie, the national cookie, and all of the contenders that were presented by the house baker, Mickey Mann, will be baked and brought to that coffee break day. So you'll have a chance to taste some of the contenders, to vote, and we'll also have little bags of all of the cookies to sell as a little bit of a fundraiser at that event. And when we get our results, we're going to submit those results to Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and say, this is what we think Canada's national cookie should be. So, I mean, this is important. Like, I'd say this is like one of those things you better show up for. On the last day of the True North Exhibition, which is the 16th of December, we are also going to bid farewell to the Canada 150 year with free hot chocolate for all the visitors all afternoon. So that's something fun to think about. Okay, so I think I'm getting really close to the end. Eric's being a very good conversationalist at the other end, talking to me in sign language. I guess I really want to point out that our sponsor, DeMille's Farm Market, has been an awesome sponsor. And talk about Christmas and all of the wonderful things that Christmas entails, which is like food and music. DeMille's offers an excellent food experience. At Christmas time, it is really quite lovely to go out there. And it's kind of like an event all by itself. It's not just a grocery store or farm market. Go on out and enjoy the ambiance out there. It feels very, I don't know, very, very Huga. That's what it feels like. Yeah. We are going to be back next week with one more show before we take a Christmas break. So have a wonderful week, everyone. We'll see you next time.